We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Mully and Hall. Early to start your day with Chicago sports talk.
We go ahead.
Time to catch you up on this morning's show so far.
MLB players reportedly plan to counter the owner's financial proposal with a suggestion of a 100-plus game season that includes prorated salaries. Is that a serious offer?
I think that's a bid for more money, if I'm not mistaken. If they're going to prorate over 100 games, and I guess there would be room for 100 games, then they're asking for more money out of the owners. These are not, in my opinion, serious grounds for discussion. It just seems like these are shots across the bow, back and forth, and then we're going to get into more serious conversation. The real issue here is that they're running out of time, and they need to find something that they can agree upon and a methodology of getting to a compromise.
Mully and Hall.
I get a kick out of you guys.
Taking you to work every morning from 5 to 9.
Do you see any scenario in which Mitchell Trubisky stays with the Bears if he's not the starter next year? Is Trubisky's future in Chicago at stake in the so-called quarterback competition?
Is his future at stake? Yes. You know, because every single player, whether it's the quarterback or the offensive tackle, if they're the starter and they're expecting to receive a big payday and they're not performing at the level that's expected of them, then you're making the decision for the team. So could Mitch come back if he was not the starter? I'm not so sure, because I think the language according to Nick Foles' contract, if we're assuming that Nick Foles is the healthy starter, if Mitchell Trubisky is not, then you're going to have to make some financial decisions at the quarterback positions accordingly.
Mully and Hall.
That's a hell of a team.
On 670 The Score.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Tom Thayer kind enough to sit in this morning, and it's just glorious to be in the orbit of the great man. We are broadcasting live through the Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. And Tom, you are in a garage, right? Is that how you described it? You're literally in Joliet in a garage.
Yes. I mean, I can open the garage door and you can hear it open. Yes, I am. I am sitting in a garage, thankfully provided by my nephew, Big Dane, because he has Wi-Fi. Again, staying at my mom and dad's house after they passed away, you know, 89 and 86 years old, no use for Wi-Fi, so come over here and enjoy the comforts of a two-car garage.
That is really funny. And again, my heart goes out to you. Dealing with the house and going through all that, I've had the misfortune of having both my parents pass away. Yesterday would have been my dad's 90th birthday, so you know, got on a little chat with my brothers who are overseas at this point, and you know, all had some fun memories and all of that. But I do recall going through the house and the number of stuff, that all the things that are left over and all the work you have to do, and it's a difficult thing to do, and it's I think everyone is in your family is blessed to have you there, because it's you know, it's always a hard emotional thing, and there's so much that people collect over the course of a lifetime and so many memories as you go through things. So it must be a real emotional journey for you.
Well, it is. You know, I've probably learned as much about my dad in cleaning out his garage and shed that I knew about him his whole life. I mean, I found a vacuum cleaner up in the attic of the garage that was probably some from the late 50s. Why was my dad saving it? He didn't need it, had no idea. So it's been interesting, and, you know, there's a lot of emotions that you go through, but, you know, in the since this pandemic has started, I've, you know, been doing a lot of it by myself. So I don't have the emotions tied in with my brothers and sisters. If it's something that we need to get rid of, I get rid of it. And, you know, so it's been a weird experience, but I have nothing but great memories of my mom and dad. So, you know, it's kind of a learning experience in its own right.
We were joking yesterday, like, we grew up with what we called Russian technology. Like, we always kind of were, in those days, you know, you'd have NASA and the U.S., you know, landing in the ocean, and the Russians were, like, launching Sputniks and just kind of crashing into the land. You know, they did these hard landings from outer space, and they always seemed to have, like, a different kind of science than we did. And that was the case with the Mulligans growing up on the South Side. We had a car battery operated lawnmower. I have never seen one before nor since. My dad had gotten an old lawnmower and somehow hooked it up. So you'd have a car battery, and we'd have it downstairs. You'd hook it up to electricity, and you try to charge the thing, and then you'd carry, you know, battery acid on your shirt. You carry the thing upstairs, hook it up on the lawnmower, and then about, I don't know, halfway through the backyard, you'd do the front yard, the backyard, the thing would conk out, and then you'd have to go charge it for another hour before you could finish cutting the grass. Who lives like that? It was insane. We you know, we had coal shovels. We didn't have snow shovels. So we'd be out, like, you know, the snow would come and the shovel was heavier than the snow. And it is just insane, some of the ways that we lived, some of the things my old man would kind of rig up or have us do. You just look at him like, Dad, what, you know, how did you find this thing, and why are we forced to use it?
You know what? It's the same thing here. You know, my dad played a lot of handball when we were growing up, and I probably found 25 cans, handball cans filled with nails or tacks or whatever he was saving. And because my mom and dad are Depression era kids, they didn't throw anything away. So all these reused material, my dad, I wish I had half of the brain power that my dad does mechanically, because he can fix anything. And so you didn't have to go to a mechanic or, you know, to find a handyman to fix whatever was broken, because my dad fixed everything himself.
That was when my, you know, my mom died a lot earlier than my dad, and he ended up moving into this apartment, moved out of the house we grew up in. And when he died, we were going through all the stuff there, and there's, like, you know, you'd find, like, a drawer, and it would be like rubbing alcohol, but there'd be like 12 bottles of it, you know, like, just the regular plastic bottle of rubbing alcohol probably cost a buck. They'd had some sale, like, you know, 4 for $1. So he had loaded up. But, I mean, for a lifetime, right? And, I mean, there'd be an underwear drawer filled with underwear. He still in the plastic because there was some sale and he had kind of loaded it. We get to the freezer, and there are, he had gone to the store and gotten ground beef, and he made, you know, clearly hamburger patties, and he wrapped them in foil, and then he put a piece of masking tape on it and wrote the word hamburger. So my brother is standing there holding this stuff, and he's going through it, and he's doing my dad's voice. My dad was born in the north of England, spent a lot of time in Ireland, had a very unique voice, and I believe everyone that knew my dad, everyone that grew up with us, everyone that all of our friends, my wife, anybody in my life did an impersonation of my father, because it was such a, he had this very unique voice. So my brother's standing there and he's holding this thing up and reading the labels, hamburger, 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 hamburger. And he gets down to the bottom, and there is, like, it's like the guy got exhausted of making hamburger patties. So there's this giant thing of clearly ground beef, and there's a little label on it, and he reads, big hamburger. And I mean, we fell over laughing yesterday as we recalled that story. And it was, you know, because it's a hard emotional thing. But going through that, man, we had so many laughs. And it was so nuts, some of the stuff that my old man had saved. It was really amazing.
You know, last thing for me, I was born in 1961. As I was cleaning out the attic of the garage, I found an unopened case bought in 1972 of Santa Claus mugs. And I look at it, and I look at the date. Okay, 72. Okay, they bought that when I was 10 years old. And, you know, and it sat up there for the lifetime, you know. It's those things that you see in the sitcoms, but it's reality when you go back and you have older parents who are saving things forever.
Did you throw out the mugs, or did you save them?
No, I saved them.
And I...
You know, told my brother to take him, and, you know, I don't know if he's going to distribute them, use them, or whatever deal is. It's a case of unopened Santa Claus head mugs.
It's fantastic. Oh, that's beautiful. All right, we've got Biggs time next. We're going to bring in our guy Biggsy. We'll talk about some of the NFL rules. We'll talk some Bears with Brad Biggs. It's Mully and Haw. He is Tom Thayer, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the Score.
Brad Biggs. Biggs time.
Biggs.
With Mully and Haw. Biggs time.
The Biggs Report.
With Brad Biggs.
Biggs time.
Biggsy.
His name is Brad Biggs.
Brad Biggs talks football with you.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the Score. We have the great Tom Thayer in this morning, and we are delighted to welcome in the football man of the Chicago Tribune, a longtime contributor to the station, and of course a valued friend. Brad Biggs joins us on the Al Pamonte Ford Hotline. Al Pamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Biggs A!
Morning, boys. What's going on?
Well, Tom talked to Dean Blandino, and he's been explaining some of the delay with the 4th and 15. He's kind of into it. I don't want to create an opinion here, Tom. My take was that you kind of like the idea. The owners, it's 2 years running that they have turned down this idea. Why are the onside kicks not working, Brad? And do they need to revisit this?
The onside kicks became significantly more difficult for the kicking team to recover at the start of the 2018 season when they changed the rules for safety with the kickoff, which prevent the kicking team, the coverage guys, from having a running start before the ball's put in play. Now the kickoff coverage team cannot move until the kicker's foot strikes the ball. With the running start, it obviously made it easier for those guys to travel the 10 yards or 11 yards needed to reach the receiving team, try to block them out of the way, and get hands on the onside kick. So the statistics have taken quite a dip. It used to be in the 5 years previous to the rule change, 2013 to 2017, roughly 16% of all onside kicks were recovered by the kicking team. That figures down around 10%, just below 10% since the rule change. And really, it's become very difficult to recover an onside kick that everyone in the stadium knows is coming. You've still got an opportunity to spring a surprise on the opponent from time to time. But as you guys know, those are rare, the surprise onside kicks. The ones at the end of the game are difficult to cover, although it should be pointed out, guys, the Bears are ahead of the curve in that category. They're 2-for-3 since the start of the 2018 season with onside kicks. Cody Parkey hit one at the Giants in 2018, and Eddie Pinheiro got a successful one against the Saints last year.
You know, Biggs, those ones that those guys recovered, that's kind of those unsuspecting ones that you kick in the middle of the field because you're aware of a guy that's leaving a second, half a second, you know, maybe even a little bit earlier. When you talk about these stats, are they only talking about the end-of-game onside kicks, or are they taking those ones that you talked about, the unsuspecting ones that may happen at the beginning of the second half or at the close of a half? Are those ones in the analytics of the study of onside kicks?
Yeah, I think they've got all the onside kicks sort of factored in there, and it's become a challenge. And one of the things that I think kickers and special teams coordinators have gone away from, it used to be that you saw the kicker aim for that really high second bounce, where they would kick the ball into the ground, hoping to get a lot of hang time on that second bounce that the ball took. Those are more difficult to recover now because the guys can't get down there. So now you see the more of the squibs where they're almost hoping for pure luck, where they try to kind of pinball it off a guy. You've seen some onside attempts to the middle of the field. So they've got to get more creative with what they're going to do because their coverage guys don't have that, you know, 5-yard running start or so, 8-yard running start that really helped them cover that ground.
We talked a little bit about Mitchell Trubisky this morning, about the idea that if indeed he doesn't win the starting job, and I don't know that everybody is expecting him to, given what they gave up for Nick Foles and the fact that they brought him in and his previous relationship with Nagy, the whole thing. What happens to him? Is there any chance that he stays here if he doesn't win the starting job? Is there any chance that they want him? And most likely, when they don't pick up the option, if you don't win the starting job, you're heading elsewhere.
Yeah, I mean, I would think if he doesn't win the starting job or slide into the starting job in midseason and then perform spectacularly, you're looking at Mitch Trubisky entering free agency next March and looking for the opportunity that's best for him. And that'll probably be a situation where he's looking for that place where he'd go, where maybe the starter isn't completely entrenched and he could work his way back into a starting role. But I don't think that anyone would rush out to sign Mitch Trubisky as their starting quarterback if he doesn't win this job, because you'd look at it and you'd say, well, what did he do in 2020? And then obviously the 2019 season for him wasn't so hot. And to circle back real quick on the onside kick thing, guys, I think the owners in the league kind of wanted to be cautious with any type of significant rule change, because they rushed into the pass interference being something that coaches could challenge a year ago. They had the egregious error in the playoff game between the Rams and the Saints, and so they rushed through a rule change that was a disaster for him this past season. So I think they learned from that experience, and they don't want to make a significant change to the rules until they feel like they've really covered every single angle that could result from a significant change, like giving the offense a chance to score and then throw a pass for 75 yards and a touchdown without any time coming off the clock. I mean, that would be a huge shift to the game of football.
Big Z, whether you're talking about Mitchell Trubisky and Nick Foles, or you're talking about Adam Shaheen and some of the other players here that we all have expectations for, this season's kind of unique, and they have such lack of face-to-face, coach-to-coach contact with these players. Is that going to test your patience and evaluation when this thing gets underway? By that, are you going to have shorter amount of patience for some of these guys because you need to see them show significant signs of development or improvement?
I think that's a great point, Tom. And the flip side of that is I think you're going to need some patience for some guys that you're integrating into the program for the first time, whether it be some of your draft picks or some of the newcomers. So this is going to be a huge challenge, not only of the coaches in terms of their ability to be teachers, and then the players and their ability to be students. You know, the coaches can be strategically fantastic X's and O's guys, or coaches can have, you know, super interpersonal relationships with the players where they kind of know what buttons to push in terms of motivating guys and picking them up and that type of thing. But you're going to need coaches that are great teachers, I think. And in that respect, I think it's a good thing for the Bears that you're not looking at a whole lot of change on defense. You do feel comfortable with what they're doing on defense, and you've got established guys now after Chuck Pagano came in last season and brought a lot of new position coaches with him. They're established and the players are familiar with them now.
Brad, is there going to be any kind of addition to the offensive line? I know you get this question all the time. Larry Warford still hasn't signed anywhere. I don't know what your read is when you start talking about people on the free agent market. It often is that they are looking for more than they're going to get. You look at Cam Newton, you know, he's not interested in signing a short term, at least now he isn't, a 1 year deal, a prove it type of contract. He's looking for an opportunity and he's looking for money. And eventually maybe he gets that if he can hold out long enough, and he's made enough that he probably could.
Yeah, the Warford thing's the one that you're sort of curious about, because when he was cut loose by the Saints, there was this rush, this guy's going to be the biggest thing on the market. And he's still on the market. The calendar's about to turn to June. He clearly has not gotten an offer that's close to what he's been seeking. You know, he's going to earn about $7 million this season to play for the Saints, and to think that he's going to get anything near that at this point seems rather unlikely. I think Larry Warford's a guy who could wind up having to play for, I'm just guessing, $3.5 million this year, maybe something like that. Would the Bears be in on that? I've got no idea at this point, but Warford's going to have his number, and we'll see if his number moves if teams aren't calling. But he's a guy to keep an eye on. You know, Jason Peters, the longtime Eagles left tackle, who's close to 40. He's on the market, but I don't see the Bears bringing in a left tackle. You know, they're kind of committed to Charles Leno the way that contract's drawn up. So I don't see a big move coming on the offensive line. And that's an area where, boy, the Bears, they got to get out on the field. They got to see what they've got in Jermaine Ifedi. They've got to let Juan Castillo actually work with his guys. I'd be interested to know what Tom thinks about, you know, how long that process takes, and how much the Bears have missed, because they're just going to be getting into these virtual OTAs. So it's not like they've missed a ton of time on the field yet. But boy, pretty soon the clock's going to be ticking on missed opportunities for the Bears with a position group that needs to be a lot better.
Yeah, I agree with you, Biggs. I think there's nothing more valuable than combat reps between the offense and defensive line. And that's where you can get a lot of specific coaching from Juan Castillo, but then you can get a better understanding of what you need to improve. And I think Juan Castillo is a coach that's very specific about his techniques and the fundamentals he teaches, that he can coach specifically by watching your feet in relation to how they're working with your hands, and you can coach by that. But again, it's about the reps that are needed. You know, Big Z, one question for you is David Montgomery. I really have a lot of respect for him. I think he's going to develop into a great back. But what quarterback helps Montgomery the most? Is it a guy like Nick Foles that has versatility, or is it a guy like Mitchell Trubisky who's developing but has really threatening legs or feet himself in terms of threatening the defense?
I think that's a good question, and I wouldn't dismiss it immediately, but I think Foles is the guy that can help him out better. I really do, because with Mitch's athletic ability, which is far superior to Foles, you know, Foles isn't going to win a whole lot of foot races and scare defenses with his legs, but Mitch is able to execute those zone reads, okay, and those can involve David and be an opportunity for David to get the ball. But what I think what Foles does, and probably does to a greater degree, is those RPOs. And if Foles, who has more experience reading defenses and by all accounts is probably more advanced at that right now than Mitch is, if Foles has the opportunity to do that in the offense, I think that could benefit Montgomery getting better opportunities. You know, there's not going to be missed reads, mix-ups, or that type of thing, and perhaps Montgomery can get going. I thought he was a little bit better the final third of the season last year, Tom, and certainly they're still very optimistic about him, but the numbers have got to look a good deal better this year to feel that way. Moving forward into year three for him.
Brad, thank you. Great catching up. Be well.
Stay safe, boys.
Thanks, Biggs.
That is Brad Biggs from the Chicago Tribune, their fine football man. A lot there, a lot of fun talking about it. And, Tom, you know, you got to find a way to make that offense work, and we got to talk about it a little bit. We'll do that when we come back. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
When we get going, whenever that is, I think what's been really good is the fact of our coaches talking through how we're going to go about with reps, creating, you know, ways to evaluate both these guys. They've been really good in the discussions that we're having, just learning the things that we're keeping in our offense, the things that we're not keeping. And, you know, obviously Nick has a history with us in Philadelphia as a rookie, and then in Kansas City as a backup there to Alex Smith. And then obviously other coaches too that are on our staff. But it's been Coach Flip's done a really good job, Coach Laser, of really keeping things going in that room that we have. And, you know, when we get out to training camp, whenever that is, or these OTAs, they'll be rocking and rolling.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. That, of course, is Matt Nagy. He was on with Rich Eisen a couple days ago and talking about the offense, talking about the quarterback competition. Tom Thayer is with us. And, Tom, we have to talk about the offense a little bit, because I think, at least on paper, it looks like the defense has improved pretty much significantly. And when you look at on paper what they've done, you would seem to think that the defense isn't going to be a problem. Now, you know, the reality is, since Matt Nagy got here, you go 12-4 and then 8-8, and now we get a kind of a season where you figure out which was the aberration. You know, are they this good football team that can go 12-4, or are they this team that failed to take advantage of many things and went 8-8? Certainly a disappointing season a year ago. The offense hasn't worked necessarily since about midway through his first season here, and he goes into his third, probably with the very strong belief, after watching Kansas City and Andy Reid win the Super Bowl, that the scheme is not the problem, and that the signal caller will determine how the scheme works, whether it be Mitch in his third year, or excuse me, his fourth year, growing as a player, or whether it be this idea of the scheme itself taking care of things, because you got a guy that now knows how to run it in Nick Foles.
Yeah, you know, it's going to be interesting, because I almost think that the quarterback discussion's getting overplayed. Because if you have Nick Foles or Mitchell Trubisky that come out and they have a career year, but they run the ball as ineffectively as they did last year or non-threatening when they went into either their home or away stadiums, you're not going to have success. You know, because everybody, you know, they bring up the name Ryan Tannehill or, you know, what did he have with him? Hey, Derrick Henry's a pretty damn good running back, and he's productive. You go back and you look at Trent Dilfer. Why did they win? Because they had Jamal Lewis, pretty darn good running back, 2,000 yards. And when Matt Nagy went to the podium at the conclusion of the season, the first thing he addressed is the physical style and the approach of the running game and how it's going to be the biggest assistance to making this offense better. And I still think that's the same, Mully. You know, you're going to have a limited amount of full pad practices. You better take advantage of them. And the thing about it is you can go through these OTAs and you can go through these non-padded practice. All as they do is they increase the insecurities in the offense and defensive linemen because you're not playing real football. So from game one of this upcoming season to game however many games they play, we better be sitting here talking about the influence of the running game on the entire offense. And that's why I was asking Biggs a little bit about David Montgomery, because I think he is the guy. A couple of years ago when they had Jordan Howard averaging 4-plus yards a carry, the offense looked a lot better, and it was a lot more threatening because they did have a bread-and-butter package to their offense. If you fail to address the physical style of play up front, you're going to fail because you cannot be reliant upon the quarterback to be the savior of this team. If you don't run the ball, you're going to fatigue your defense. And if you can get any type of lean and have a threatening running game, your defense is going to be able to be more aggressive. And so, to me, I know we've been discussing the quarterback position at length since the end of the season, and I'm glad they brought in competition, and I'm glad it's open competition, but it's going to be about how the power running game affects this offense.
This goes back, though, to philosophically, does the offensive play caller, the head coach, want to run the football? Does he view running the football as a method of taking a break from the passing game, or is he setting up the passing game by running the ball? I don't know if he can change what philosophically what he's doing. It was bizarre to see him after some of these games like, yeah, okay, I'm with you. Yeah, we got to run more. And then it's almost like, okay, we ran it.
I'm totally with you. I don't disagree.
Exactly. I just don't know that he believes it and really wants to get to it. And that's the thing that kind of stops you cold when you think, hey, this is a possibility. They could do this. They could do that. I just don't know what he wants to do.
Well, you know, he went up, you know, the thing about it is the initial address at the podium was about, you know, having to develop those calluses that the offensive linemen developed during the course of training camp, during those hot practices where in there in the inside run or they're in teamworks and they're repeatedly and repetitively running the football. That's how you refine your skills up front. So as much as you think that you can have an 800 play call sheet that's going to confuse the opponent, that's not going to be the case. It's going to be the development of a bread and butter a series of offense that you can take into any environment and win with it. And again, you know, you go back and you look at the track record of success of teams over the years, it's the offensive running game is going to be the biggest assistance. It's the biggest threat. It's the biggest way to take advantage of defenses that have some vulnerabilities up front. But I do think, you know, and Harry Hestand, he had that type of mentality. Every offensive line coach does. And I think Juan Castillo has the same mentality. You want to be able to, you know, the first five guys leaving the locker room should be the offensive line because that's where all the pressure should be put on. It's you guys are going to win the game for us and you're going to lose the game for us.
Yeah, I mean, listen, it makes a lot of sense what you're saying, and I hope that that's the way things are. But I'm just basing it on what we've seen thus far. It doesn't seem like, you know, the other element is, I know you want to win and you want to score a touchdown on every play, and I know you want to, you know, I've heard all of the rhetoric. You do have a really good defense. You do want to protect them somewhat. I think that the Bears are more reliant upon takeaways and getting in good position on offense than they are on worrying about whether the defense is on the field too long or whether they can sustain drives. That's been the problem. There doesn't seem to be a lot of rhythm to what they've done, so they've been off the field far too long. And right. Three and outs aren't a solution to anything.
Right. You know, if you want to talk about rhythm, it's rhythm isn't 50-50. Rhythm is 70-30. You got to keep that offense on the field 70% of the time and have those multiple 10-play drives, because you can see how fatiguing it is against your opponent when you're an offense and you're breaking the huddle, you're running to the line of scrimmage, and the defense is sitting there panting with their hands on their hips. Man, psychological advantage, you are winning the game. But that's what the Bears' offense is going to be facing, is have those multiple 10-play drives that allows your defense to sit on the sideline. If those guys are coming onto the field every minute and 50 seconds of actual game time, you're putting yourself in a losing position, because defenses just aren't built for that.
312-644-6767. It's Mully and Haw. We've got Tom Thayer on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.